Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Alternative Cancer Research Institute. My name is Connie Strassheim. I'm a medical researcher and writer and author of the book Defeat Cancer, 15 Doctors of Integrative and Naturopathic Medicine Tell You How. I'm here today with Dr. Paul Stallone, a naturopathic medical doctor, or as some say, naturopathic doctor, and founder of the Arizona Integrative Medical Center in Scottsdale, Arizona. Dr. Stallone specializes in treating a variety of illnesses, including cancer, by focusing on the root causes of disease in his patients. His integrative wellness plans combine natural, alternative, and conventional treatments to support the body's healing on multiple levels. Dr. Stallone utilizes a number of cutting-edge therapies in his clinic, some of which we'll discuss today during this interview. So welcome, Dr. Stallone. It's an honor to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you. My honor.
Is there anything you'd like to add about your work, which I didn't mention just now?
I've been treating cancer patients for about 11 years. I'd say the main focus of our practice is treating patients with cancer. That's about it.
Okay. Well, looking at your website, I noticed that you do treat a lot of conditions from chronic fatigue syndrome to fibromyalgia to ADD and many other things along with cancer. Now, as a patient, I might look at your webpage and think, well, how can one doctor specialize in so many different illnesses? But as a medical researcher, I also know that some of the factors which cause other chronic diseases are also the same factors which cause cancer. So would you agree with this? And if so, can you tell our listeners about what some of those causative factors of disease are?
I do agree. When I'm evaluating a patient in general, we're looking at lifestyle. We're looking at toxicities. We're looking at exposures. We're looking at genetics. We are also looking at just the overall person in general. So as far as when I take a case with a patient who's coming in to see me with cancer, I am paying attention to all of that, spiritually, mentally, physically. Where is this person at? What risk factors have they had? Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much where we're focusing in general with these patients to put together a proper or holistic treatment plan for them.
Right, sure. And so what would you say causes cancer? Is it the same for everybody, or does it depend from person to person?
It is unique to each individual. There isn't one form of cancer, cause to
sure.
all cancers. What I am seeing is to really simplify it, it's an imbalance in the individual's life, whether it's a physical imbalance or an emotional imbalance. I mean, a lot of people will call that stress and so on. But there is some break in the system, usually in different forms in each person. So there isn't just one unique cause for cancer.
Sure.
As multi-diseases go, that's a good way to describe cancer, because it isn't just a single disease. It is a multifactorial or multi-situational disease.
Mm-hmm, sure. And I hear a lot of doctors say that environmental toxins they play a huge role in the development of cancer, but also emotional stress does. And would you say that for some people, one of those factors is more important than the other, or they both tend to be important? Or what do you think about that?
We look at both. Environmental factors do play a big role.
Yeah.
We refer to them more as toxins in general.
Sure.
That could be in many different forms, whether
sure.
it's pathogenic, whether it's exposures to different chemicals, whether it's exposures to metals. But when it comes down to the emotional side, or what affects the individuals quite a bit as well, is through emotional stress or just in chronic stress. Chronic cortisol, are you familiar with cortisol? Cortisol is a hormone that's given off by our adrenal glands that's in response to stress.
Sure.
So when an individual is enduring chronic stress, cortisol is secreted, and the overall end result is a suppressed immune system, which then opens us up to different diseases like cancer.
Right, right. And this is why managing our stress levels really matters, because you suppress the immune system when you're stressed. And, I mean, nobody can avoid stress completely, but managing it is important, especially at least in the research I've done. It's the long-term stress response that really hurts the body.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. And we provide for all patients all different types of stress releases. I mean, there's plenty of them out there, but and I uniquely pick them for each patient. So what's going to work for one patient isn't necessarily what I'm going to choose or recommend to another patient.
Right. Sure. I was noticing on your website too that you utilize a wide variety of therapies for cancer. And so just as kind of a two-part question, first, what are some of these therapies, and how do you decide from among them which ones to give your patients?
Very good question. Each patient is very individual, and the treatment plan as well. What usually decides the treatment course, one, what type of cancer, what stage a patient's in, where are they at just in general with life. Not everyone knows all about alternative or natural therapies for cancer. Most of our patients, or most patients in general that I've met, this is new to them, even though many of these treatments have been around for a very long time.
Interesting.
But some of the treatment options that we offer here in general would be anti-cancer nutritional therapies like high-dose vitamin C. That seems to be becoming a pretty big standard in the, and when I say standard, many clinics are offering treatments like high-dose vitamin C. And those nutritional IVs don't just have vitamin C, but they're referred to vitamin C IVs quite often.
Sure.
We do offer many different types of IVs. Some of them include oxygen, ozone therapy, to be a little bit more specific, and so on. We also do nutrition for patients. We customize specific diets, and no two diets are usually unique. But in general, some of what makes the physician decide which treatment option is per patient, I usually take that into consideration, again, going to talking about what type of cancer, what stage they're in, and pretty much where we feel we need to go with the outcome. Because for some patients, they're doing chemotherapy. Some patients aren't doing chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. So there's a wide variety of patients coming to see us, and when they're not all of them are at the same level. Meaning some of them just want to do natural, others want to do conventional.
Sure.
So we choose accordingly.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. You know, you mentioned the IV vitamin C therapy and then the oxygen therapies, and I know those are. That vitamin C is nutritional, but when it's given in an IV, it has anti-cancer properties. And I think oxygen works the same way, doesn't it? I mean, these two things actually kill cancer. They're not just things that are good for the body.
Very, very true. And both have been well-researched for a very long time. I mean, we've known that oxygen interrupts the way cancer cells grow since the 30s. I think there have been Nobel Prizes given to physicians like Dr. Warburg and Dr. Linus Pauling for vitamin C, Dr. Warburg for ozone. And all of them, these aren't anything new, but just not mainstream. But they do. They are what we call anti-neoplastic, and they do help the body fight cancer and create an environment that's unfavorable for cancer to grow.
And so could you even say that these could be used as standalone therapies for cancer, or do you tend to recommend that people go with some form of conventional treatment as well, or does that, again, depend on the person?
It depends on the person. Uh-huh. As individual as each person is as individual as their treatment plans are.
So these therapies, can they be used as standalone treatments? Are they powerful enough to treat cancer?
I've been treating patients since 2001. What kind of brought me into this field was a friend of the family was diagnosed, and during some of my, we call them off-site rotations or residency programs in conventional medicine, I referred this patient to a physician that was treating cancer, but I was assigned as the main physician or the main student doctor on his case. And through that experience is what really pushed me to continue to research and help patients with cancer, because I got to see what just standalone, these treatments standalone do for an individual. This particular patient that I'm referring to is a stage 3 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma patient, and that had been given the option of chemotherapy and had chosen to go the natural route prior to doing anything conventional. and put his trust in me even as a new physician. And I got to see it firsthand. Treatments, all natural treatments, work in his case. And here he's still here among us. Here it is about 11 or 12 years later. And cancer-free.
Sure. Well, and just so our listeners know, do you mind if I just read the list of some of the stuff that you offer on your website?
Sure,
some of the treatments, yeah. So so Dr. Stallone does a number of different things to treat cancer, and some of those therapies, besides the intravenous vitamin C and ozone and oxygen therapies, there's blood irradiation, nutritional IVs, poly-MVA, DMSO, immunomodulation, sodium bicarbonate, homeopathy, in addition to supplements and botanical substances. Now, we don't have time today to go into each one of those, but so Dr. Stallone, I just wanted to ask you, are there, of this list of therapies, are there any that you give to all of your patients, or what you consider kind of baseline foundational for all of them?
I would have to say one of the treatments that is used in pretty much with all my cancer patients as an adjunct to some of the other ones, the other treatments that you mentioned earlier, would be something I describe as called major autohemotherapy. This is an ozone treatment. It is a blood treatment that has been done for many years. It's a treatment that we remove a certain amount, a specific amount of patient's blood, all in a sterile environment. And the blood is, you mentioned irradiation. We use that. We use an ultraviolet blood irradiation machine that has different frequencies.
And just for the blood irradiation, what does that mean, irradiation, just for our listeners?
We're exposing the blood to forms of ultraviolet light.
Okay.
There's something called UVA and UVC light, and both of those contribute to the immune system in different ways. There's been plenty of research to show that just that treatment alone excites the immune system or stimulates the immune system, but more selectively. When we're treating cancer, we're looking at specific cells, and it seems most of the research are looking at what something we call natural killer cells and macrophages, and so the irradiation part of it stimulates the immune system in that manner. So that's usually one of the first parts. So blood would pass through that ultraviolet system. We would gather the blood in what we call sterile evacuated containers, and that's where blood then is ozonated. So we add oxygen to it at specific concentrations, and the blood is then mixed for a period of time. We usually couple that with other IVs. You had talked about DMSO and some of the other ones. So we usually couple this particular treatment with other ones, and the blood is mixed and then returned back to the patient through the ultraviolet and back to the patient, and then and we usually finish that off with another anti-neoplastic IV that complements the ozone therapy.
And so anti-neoplastic IV, you mean substances, I should say, that are going to specifically kill the cancer cells or stimulate the immune system in some form so that it goes after the cancer cells?
Yes.
Okay. And the DMSO, what does that do specifically?
DMSO has many properties, but when used in this combination, DMSO is, I like to describe it as a good transporter or a taxi cab. It allows us to get to areas of the body that normally certain nutrients aren't readily available to. As an example, with the ozone is an oxidative therapy. While the IV of DMSO is going into the patient, we are treating the blood. The blood then is returned back to mix with all the ingredients of the IVs. With DMSO, DMSO allows properties from the specific ozone therapy to get deep within cells in order to cause what we cell death or apoptosis, is more of the medical terms.
That's interesting.
It also DMSO in itself has been shown to be anti-cancer, and it's coupled with many different treatments, but specifically with the major autohemotherapy, that's its main use with this IV.
And the blood irradiation, you're saying that it stimulates a certain part of the immune system, and it sounded like you were saying the natural killer cells and the types of cells that are responsible for fighting cancer. Is that correct?
It is correct. We frequently, or I would say with many patients, we test their blood for these different cell types and to make sure that we're getting the immune response that we're looking for.
And does oxygenating the blood, does that also cleanse it? I've heard that ozone has antimicrobial properties. I'm not sure if within this context it also does that, but...
It does it in that sense. Also, the ultraviolet light. Usually, whenever we're dealing with cancer, we're also dealing with what we call what may be opportunistic infections. Because let's just use an example: if I'm seeing a patient post chemotherapy, their immune system has been affected from those treatments. Even patients who are cancer-free, their immune system has been affected. I'll leave it broad like that.
Mm-hmm.
And opportunistic infections or any type of bacteria, funguses, viruses, parasites may or may not be there. But the ultraviolet light and the ozone therapy both do those same properties. So they both do offer antimicrobial effects. And in the way you described it, yes, cleansing the blood that way.
That's kind of nice. It would seem then that would really help the patient's immune system to fight cancer, because I know that those opportunistic infections can, in and of themselves, can be a huge problem.
Very, very true. So it really becomes looking at a very broad spectrum treatment to help the patients on multiple levels.
Sure. And so the nutritional IVs, what do you put in those and what's the purpose of those?
Now, when you're referring to nutritional IVs, you're referring to, well, they're again, that's a pretty broad term.
Okay.
And when we're talking about nutritional IV, I'm going to kind of steer, since we're talking about patients with cancer, more of the vitamin C IVs. Many of the patients that I have treated have been either exposed to conventional medicine already, meaning radiation, chemotherapy, and many of them haven't. But many of the ones that we see that have been exposed to or are incorporating conventional treatment plans, their complaints are a little bit different than the patient who has just received a diagnosis and said, hey, I am deciding to take the natural route rather than conventional route first or by itself. For those patients, the nutrition is a little bit different, where we're trying to help the patient get the proper nutrition. So with any weight loss that they may have endured, just feeling crummy for so long, so mm-hmm. that nutrition will be a little bit different than the patient who is looking for, hey, I want an IV that is anti-neoplastic, that, you know, I was told that there's nutritional IVs that can kill cancer. I want mm-hmm. those. So those are usually consistent of high doses of vitamin C, different minerals that have been shown to be anti-neoplastic. Each individual patient is unique with the ingredients that we put in those IVs, but the one standard oxidative property would be the vitamin C. Most people think of vitamin C as an antioxidant, but mm-hmm. more and more what we're seeing with research is that in these high dosages, vitamin C is actually an oxidative therapy. How it fights cancer cells is it converts into a hydrogen peroxide, which most people kind of relate, hydrogen peroxide, wow.
Yeah.
But the body converts vitamin C into what's called an oxidative therapy, and cancer cells, when faced with hydrogen peroxide or hydrogen peroxide-like molecules, they can die.
So basically, vitamin C, in converting to hydrogen peroxide is selectively lethal to them without harming the normal cells, right?
You got it.
Yeah. I had heard earlier, I don't know if it was this year or sometime last year, that the FDA was trying to take away the possibility of using intravenous vitamin C therapy. And has doctors' use of this therapy been restricted in any way?
It appeared there was a time about last year where it was a bit restricted. From my own research, I understand that the main use for vitamin C is actually in the military and used in burn victims. I'm not sure if it's going away anytime soon, because there is a definite use for it. And right now, what happened was many of the common suppliers have either decided not to continue to make it, and more of the compounding pharmacies are now producing vitamin C. But the FDA at this point hasn't made any changes to what the uses in a naturopathic clinic can do with vitamin C.
Sure. And so in addition to these things we've talked about already, what other therapies do you tend to use a lot of with your patients? Or again, with some, will you use like the sodium bicarbonate or DMSO or the homeopathy? Because I think sometimes as someone who is sick, and I just know this from experience having gone through chronic Lyme disease, I would look at a list of stuff and think, oh, I should do all of that because the more I can do for myself, the better. But I wouldn't necessarily think that this is wise for people with cancer.
Good question.
Yeah.
Very good question. most patients come to me with a plethora of information. They've researched the internet. They're on Google. Everyone is saying, hey, I heard about this, and they're bringing me lists of, I heard this was good for this. This is what I want to do. Usually how I help patients in that category to narrow down, okay, what treatment options are we going to use? Mm-hmm. One, what I've seen clinically work for patients in my clinic is usually where I steer a patient with the direction of which treatment options to use. Now, for instance, we mentioned some of the other ones. Poly-MVA has been around for some time. It's a palladium alpha-lipoic acid supplement, and has been around for quite some time now. I don't recall exactly when it came on the market, but that is another, usually a supplement that I advise patients that complements a lot of the conventional treatments as well as the natural treatments. So that's something I usually do make recommendations to patients to order to use in addition to whatever treatment options we have here or with their conventional doctors. Supplements, there are different herbal remedies that have been shown, so we customize supplement programs for them too.
So just real quick, so I'll come back to the supplements, but just on the poly-MVA, how does that work and why does it work well with conventional therapy?
Okay. The palladium lipoic acid molecule has been shown to utilize, for instance, if a patient has endured, I'm going to simplify it a little bit better. Any toxic amount of waste that a cell produces, it appears to turn that around and utilize it as energy for healthy cells. So it becomes a complement to help healthy cells, but target the cancer cells by depleting them of what they're needing. Mm-hmm. So it sort of detoxifies the body, but also with alpha-lipoic acid is also one of the treatment options that patients have with cancer too. And they're done either orally, intravenously. I mentioned the poly-MVA. That is one name brand product that utilizes palladium and lipoic acid.
Okay. And I would think that as a naturopathic doctor who works with patients who are also doing conventional treatments, you have to know which therapies are going to complement those regimens, because I imagine that not every natural treatment is going to be compatible with a chemotherapy regimen. Is that correct?
That is correct. And many times oncologists or radiologists just don't understand the treatment options in natural therapies. Mm. And many times they're requesting that their patients don't do anything outside of what they feel is within the protocol. So many times natural treatments aren't always given together or side by side with conventional per the physician. But there are times that we do not use certain natural therapies during a conventional treatment and other times that we do. I usually choose that depending on what their conventional treatment options are.
Okay. And why do doctors in conventional medicine not want, or some doctors, I should say, not want their patients to do natural therapies alongside chemo or radiation?
I believe it's pretty simple. If it's outside of what they have decided is protocol, mm-hmm. it just doesn't go. I believe it's that simple. It's just, hey, it's not in what the boilerplate that we have, or this is not what they've researched to show. Cancer treatment conventionally is pretty much dictated by double-blind placebo studies hey, this is what worked for this patient, this was what didn't work. And so most conventional physicians aren't wanting to step outside that box at all. Just, hey, this is what the protocol says, and this is what we're going to do. And many of them just don't understand, you know, some of the other treatment options. I do work with a few different conventional oncologists that are open-minded to natural or alternative treatments. And many of them are open-minded. They've seen the results of working together. They find that their patients handle even the conventional treatments much better. They're not dealing with outside infections that affect their patients and putting out, you know, other types of fires, so
sure,
to speak.
Sure. Well, and I think the FDA limits what they're allowed to prescribe anyway. And I, at least, you know, that's what some of the doctors have told me. But it makes sense to me that, you know, if chemotherapy is going to weaken your immune system, then doing some adjunct nutritional therapy could only be a good thing, because your immune system is what you need to fight disease.
Very, very true.
Mm-hmm. I had mentioned to you yesterday about just some case stories, and is there any type of case story that you'd like to share which you think might either encourage people who, or offer helpful insights into those who are seeking alternative cancer treatments?
Actually, I'll share a recent patient that even caught my attention with the amazing abilities of the human body to get back to being balanced and healthy. A patient came in with a stage 2 to stage 3 prostate cancer and came into my office and pretty much refused all conventional therapies, received the diagnosis from a conventional urologist and went through biopsies and had made his mind up that he was just going to use the natural route for his treatment plan. And the patient approached me and wanted to know, he had done his research, looked up some of the treatments that we discussed earlier, high doses of vitamin C, has looked at different diet plans, had looked at different supplements, the ozone therapy, alpha lipoic acid therapy, and pretty much came to me for my advice. And we put him on a pretty individualized diet, but then kind of made some changes along the way with the diet to what, are you familiar with the Gerson therapy? It's a vegan, it's pretty much a vegan juicing, alkalinizing diet. We decided that would be the best route in conjunction with the IV therapies. But he was being seen about 3 to 4 times a week with various treatments of alternating vitamin C IVs, the major autohemotherapy or ozone therapy, as I described earlier, alpha lipoic acid IVs, with different nutritional supplements as well, along with his diet. And within 1 month, I had redone an exam on him, and the tumor was basically gone. And wow. He decided to go and verify that with ultrasound and through a urologist, and he too had showed that, wow, this is, and the PSA was down. So one of my cases that had responded probably the quickest out of any, especially with the prostate cancer, without doing any type of surgery or chemotherapy.
So you think that you attribute that mostly to the diet, or the diet in conjunction with some of the therapies that you were doing with him?
I feel it was the entire combination. Mm-hmm. We created an environment that was unfavorable for cancer to grow. We gave the body the tools to be anti-neoplastic, and he compliance. He really stuck to the plan, and we achieved our goal. And here it is, I think, about a year later now, or 6 or 8 months later now. And actually, I believe it's about a year, and he's cancer-free, and PSA is and scans have all shown this outcome.
That's great. Well, and I want to come back to the diet in just a minute, but I wanted to ask you in general, have you observed that people who haven't done conventional treatment like chemotherapy and radiation, that they tend to do better on a holistic treatment program than those that haven't? Because it seems to me that if chemo and radiation affect the immune system, that perhaps your chances of recovery are better if you don't do that first, if you try and do a holistic natural approach first.
Well, with the holistic or natural approach, we are utilizing the immune system as our main anti-neoplastic medicine.
Sure.
Meaning we are giving the body what it needs. So if the immune system is affected in any way from any means, mm-hmm. That does put more of a crutch onto their treatment plan. So I always prefer getting patients prior to doing anything conventional. But I have learned through the years that there's still plenty of things that can be done to complement the conventional treatments. But preference would be patients who hadn't gotten started yet on the conventional treatments. I would say that I've really spent a lot of time on how to complement, because many of the patients I'm finding, whether it's family or just sort of the way things are right now, that if you get a cancer diagnosis, it's okay, everything becomes a rush, and the conventional, it's oncologist. Okay, what is the oncologist saying? Okay, and you know, patients want to listen to their physician in general. So, mm-hmm. if an oncologist is telling you, hey, this is what you know, this is what protocol says, they want to follow it. So many of the patients that I do treat are, the majority of them are coming to me after seeing an oncologist.
Mm.
So that has really pushed me to figure out, well, how do we work with and complement the conventional therapy?
Sure. And so when you say after they've seen the oncologist, are you saying after the oncologist has done everything they can for them and they say, we're finished with you, or concurrently while they are seeing the oncologist or at the same time?
Both. Oh, I mean, I get patients where it's, hey, we've exhausted all of our therapies. You're either a candidate for experimental at this point, experimental drugs,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, just, hey, there's nothing else we can do. And I've had good success with patients in the stage three, stage four
wow.
cancers as well. And it's pretty even. I mean, across the board,
sure.
patients with who haven't done conventional, who have, who mm-hmm. are, who now the conventional isn't working for.
Sure. And by the way, I guess the last question relating just to the treatments, the anti-cancer treatments, is I have heard that cancer can be like a chronic illness, which can be managed. It doesn't have to be a death sentence, that it's something you can live with for years and years and remain symptom-free if you take care of yourself. Is that true?
Yes, that is true. I mean, everyone is unique. Usually what happens is the second any patient or any person hears cancer, it becomes an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually try to tell patients that cancer is not an emergency. This diagnosis didn't occur just overnight. This has been in the making, and there is time. And we would utilize the right treatment options to get them, whether there are certain times where surgeries are. Sometimes I tell patients one of the most natural treatments you can do for this type of cancer would be surgery. And some of them look at me, oh, really, you're the natural doc. You're not supposed to be telling me that.
Yeah.
But there are times where surprisingly I have seen, okay, hey, the surgery is definitely warranted for this patient.
Mm-hmm.
And what my job is to do is to prepare the patient for that surgery. To help, I usually describe the cancer as a, or the tumor, if we're discussing tumors, as an angry beehive.
Mm.
And sometimes it's a lot easier just to remove this beehive out as a whole. And what my job there is to ensure that a lot of those little bees haven't left the hive to go make themselves a new hive in a new place. And in layman's terms, a lot of patients understand that concept, and they get kind of what we're talking about there, and stick to plans a lot
right.
better.
Right. So you might just say, "Go get this removed," and then you're going to catch the stray bees that might be still buzzing around.
Exactly.
Okay.
And in conventional medicine, usually that's followed with chemotherapy many times chemotherapy or radiation. Again, it's unique to what type of cancer that individual has. But I find that many of the treatments that we talked about earlier or the therapies that we talked about earlier are just as useful for those patients.
Sure, sure. Well, and you had mentioned yesterday about tailoring the diet to the individual, that, you know, making dietary recommendations is part of what you do with patients, but you don't have a one size fits all type diet plan. And so I'm curious, how do you decide upon what kind of a diet to give a patient?
We are looking at alkalinity. I mean, that's something that I'm sure many physicians have discussed with you over the past. So we are looking at alkalinity, but what I've found is that each person achieves an alkaline environment a little bit different. It isn't just straight becoming vegan or doing all raw, I'll even take it to the next, or being raw vegan isn't the only way to achieve alkalinity. For each patient, based on genetics or looking at backgrounds, that can be achieved through different means. There are some patients we do describe a diet that's more Mediterranean, like fish and vegetables. There are the list that says, hey, these are what I don't want you to eat. I mean, that's a pretty standard list. But when it comes to specifically what a person is putting in their mouth, is unique to each patient. Some of them I am doing raw vegan. For others, we're doing grass-fed meats. For instance, some leukemia patients, we're doing grass. I just see in my practice that they do better. They tend to go downhill when they're doing a raw vegan alkalizing diet.
It sounds like what you're saying is that some foods can, which might be considered to be acidic, can actually contribute to an alkaline environment in the body.
As an example, I mean, using something like apple cider vinegar, vinegar is an acid, but when taken internally, does the opposite. It causes an alkaline environment. Lemon does the same thing. But when testing lemon, it's basically what the body does with those foods that determines the outcome.
Sure. And just to clarify for listeners, why is an alkaline environment in the body important when you're treating cancer?
One thing that we have found is that cancer prefers a certain type of environment to grow. So by creating that alkaline environment, it creates an unfavorable environment for cancer to grow. So it's sort of taking them outside of their norm.
Right, versus instead of an acidic body, which is what they would rather live in.
Which promotes an anaerobic type environment for the cancer.
So your theory about diet sort of resembles that of Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, who is another doctor in New York who treats cancer using pancreatic enzymes. And I know that he had said kind of the same thing, that it depends on the person. And he also had said it depends on the type of tumor that a person has. And the no-no list of foods, I think some of our listeners already know what those are, but can you just name what a few of them might be?
Corn-fed meats or meats that have been given hormones, GMO foods in general, high sugar or high glycemic content foods. The list is really long, I guess. Processed foods in general. Those will be on the no list right off of the start.
Sure. Well, and I know we don't have a lot of time left, and this is probably a really large subject, but can you just mention briefly what the issue is, why it's so important to avoid foods that have hormones and GMOs and that sort of thing, all these things that they're adding to animals and plants and stuff?
Based on time, I would say that all of them contribute to a toxic burden. Those genetically modified foods, those hormones, when taken into our body, become part of our body. And each one of those hormones in a human body may do something different than when given to a cow or a plant. So when we receive or when we take these in, it's just adding to our toxic burden, which then promotes cells to ultimately change.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Stallone, do you have another 5 minutes? I wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of the other things that you do with patients.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks so much. Because I know your approach is not just giving things to combat the cancer and to build up the body, but that you also make lifestyle and maybe even spiritual recommendations to people. So can you talk a little bit about maybe what you do on that side of things?
Sure. Well, everyone has a different way of spiritually connecting. So what I usually do is, one, ask patients, what do you do to spiritually connect? For one person, it's meditating. Another one, it's through religious practices. Other ones, it's just getting out in nature and deep breathing. So for each individual, for others, it's yoga. So for each individual, where I make the recommendation what's going to work for them, we want to set them up for success with their health. And if I tell a patient that, that has never meditated a day in their life to I need you to meditate, they're not going to know what that is. But if that person is spiritually connected to going to church and praying to God, I would make that recommendation to them. So I really try to individualize even that treatment practice for them. So if someone has never been exposed to any of those, I present all of them to them so that they can find whatever it is that they can spiritually connect to or mentally connect to.
And do you feel that's an important part of recovery?
I do. More and more, there's been recent research on the internet too. Even I believe it was Dr. Mercola who just put a recent publication out on how emotions and how mind-body affects our genes. So I do feel it's another part of the treatment. A good mental attitude and understanding what's going on helps tremendously.
Sure. And do you make any other type of lifestyle recommendations to your patients, that things that would also help maximize their recovery in their daily lives?
Sure. If they're smoking and drinking and doing all the adding to the toxic burden to their life, I do make those recommendations and are pretty firm about them to patients. We're trying to do everything that we can to detox and the body, and anything that you do lifestyle to add to that toxic burden is going to work against the treatment plan. So I do make many recommendations to patients to stop those habits or those lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a tall order. That's a lot of different things you have to do, it sounds like. And so just one last question, Dr. Stallone, is there anything else that you'd like to just say to our listeners or people who are seeking out alternative cancer treatment options?
Just do your research. One, not all cancers are the same. And really make it make your treatment plan one that you fully understand. Patients need to be educated in what is out there, what not only conventionally but natural and alternative, because today just treating one way isn't where we're seeing success. The patients that I see that are achieving remissions and or cures are the patients who are going out and understanding truly what the disease entails and the treatment options that are available to them. So I would, my advice would be, one, not only, yes, research on the internet, but talk to physicians. Today there are many good physicians that understand the conventional treatments as well as the natural treatments, and figure out what would be best plan for that particular person.
Absolutely. Well, that's great advice. And so if somebody wants to learn more about your practice, where can they go? What website or phone number should they call?
GodstillCancerTreatmentCenter.com.
Okay.
Our phone number at the office is 480-214-3922, and the clinic's in Scottsdale, Arizona. There is one more website that's more of the general treatment options at the center, and that is just my name, www.drstallone.com.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stallone, for your time. We really appreciate it, and I'm sure our listeners do too.
My pleasure.
Can you just give your website once more?
ScottsdaleCancerTreatmentCenter.com.
Okay.
Or drstallone.com.
Well, wonderful. Well, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I think you gave some great information. It's going to help a lot of people.
Thank you so much, Connie.
Thanks, Dr. Stallone.
All right.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye-bye.